you have this snowball, right? And it's the palm of your hand. It's not big. And you roll it down the hill. And, you know, your snowball is your anxiety, your panic attacks, your depression, whatever, you know, whatever it is for you. And you roll it down this snowy hill and you don't do anything about it. You just let it roll. And by the time it gets to the bottom, it's bigger than you because it just picks up everything all along the way. Mm-hmm. And so you start out with this little problem that bothers you a little bit. And you say, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And you let it roll. And then soon it is a big deal and you don't know what to do with it anymore. And you can't handle it on your own. So what we do is we get it while it's the little snowball and you go to therapy, you talk to your friends, you lean on people, you do your self-care, you get the help you need before it snowballs, you know?
Yeah.
Before it gets out of control and you can't handle it. Welcome to the Uplift Teen Yoga Podcast. Hi, I'm Alex.
And I'm Megan, and we are teens here at Uplift.
Knowing we're not alone is everything. Join us as we explore what it means to be a teen in the world today, talking honestly about everything from mental health to relationships to spirituality.
Here we share our stories and grow through what we go through together. The time is now to awaken our inner BFF, journey from dark to light, embrace compassion over comparison, and own our whole wellness, mind, body, and spirit. I promise you can do this.
On our first ever Uplift podcast, we are exploring our own mental health journeys, diving into our stories, struggles, and triumphs. Let's do this.
Heck yeah, let's do this.
Before we dive in, I'm going to open it up for us to all take a deep breath together and set the intention of sharing our stories and being honest so that we can help those around us.
Beautiful. Sounds good.
Breath in. And deep breath out. You ready?
I am ready. Okay, so let's just check in before we get started. How are you doing? Like, honestly.
I'm pretty good. I just made a big move out here to Orange County for college. So that's been stressful to say the least, but I'm settling in. So it's going pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm right where I need to be.
How are you doing emotionally?
I'm pretty good. I think at first it was overwhelming to be in a new place. You know, mm-hmm. I don't know where anything is. I don't really know that many people, but, I'm feeling better now that I've settled in a little bit and met some people, and I really do think I'm right where I need to be. So I think I'm good.
That is the best feeling it in is. The whole wide world.
It really is. How are you doing?
I am doing, oh my goodness, where do I begin? just overwhelmed, I think, because yeah. We started school, or at least a lot of us started school this week. Yeah. And I'm taking 16 units, which isn't a lot, but it's definitely full time.
Yeah.
And two of those are like math classes, and I'm doing a biology class, and they're teaching us chemistry. So I'm just very lost.
Feel that?
Yeah. And so I think I'm overall doing well. It's just the remembering to upkeep, you know, and take care of myself and, carving out time for self-care instead of getting so overwhelmed by the idea of school that I get sucked into this feeling that I don't have time to take care of myself.
Yeah. Well, which is exactly what we're talking about today. So
exactly. So you're out here now and it sounds like overall, you know, you're feeling pretty good, but that's still so scary. So what does your inner BFF have to advise you through all of this?
I think my inner BFF is just reminding me, you know, what I've already said, but just that I'm right where I need to be. I don't need to be anywhere else. I don't need to be doing anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's coming in time. And just reminding, you know, she's reminding me that I'm strong enough to handle whatever comes and I will settle in time and everything will be good. She's got my back, man.
Oh, yeah, she does. Beautiful.
What does your inner BFF say?
Oh, gosh. I think my inner BFF is saying, okay, well, first off, we need to define what an inner BFF is because this is a term that we use a lot. I mean, my inner BFF is probably like 75%, you know, of my being if I look at it, because I am constantly connecting with her and trying to be her. So I don't know. What do you think your inner BFF is?
I think my inner BFF is just, you know, let's put it this way, the angel on my shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
She's the voice that reminds me that everything's going to be okay and that I can handle whatever comes my way. She is the opposite of the dark thoughts and, you know, the part of my mind that says, no, you suck.
Yeah.
So what do you think your inner BFF
is? I think my inner BFF, I feel her in me. Like the left upper part of my chest is this light, like little twinkling star. And is just, it's, gosh, it's like, I guess the definition for those comforting and warming thoughts that I get when I am in this situation with school and I'm just like, hey, slow down. Like, there's nothing to be scared of. You are doing fabulously. You're just letting society determine how you're feeling about all of this. So I think that she's just that, like you said, the positive, warming thoughts that's there to back me up when I need her.
She is the calm in the storm.
Yes. So I think my inner BFF would say, Megan, you're doing this all for something. Let's remember that. Yes. Your passion is psychology. Yes. And that's why you're putting all of this hard work in. And one day it's going to pay off. But for right now, enjoy the ambition and the curiosity and the fun that comes with learning.
Yeah. I think it's so important to be curious about it too, because that's a big thing.
Yes.
Like, it helps out if you can take your stress and say, hey, why am I feeling this way? What am I? Oh, I just totally rammed my face into the mic.
It's all good.
It happens.
It's what happens when you're,
but
you know.
I think it's important to be curious about things and just say, you know, how can I work with this? What can we do with it?
So, yes.
It's awesome.
I agree. So our very first question I have for you is, what brought you here to talk about mental health? You know, why does it inspire you so much? Why is it, you know, such a big part of your life?
I think there's multiple reasons, but obviously I think it's really important in today's society, and I think especially in your teenage years when you're feeling like everything all the time, to learn how to kind of maneuver that. And I don't think right now there's a lot out there that teaches you how to do that. I mean, teaches you per se, but I think you're kind of, a lot of us are just out there on our own. And I grew up struggling with mental health. You know, I grew up with depression, and genetically I've got a family history of mental illness. And so, you know, it was something that I kind of always grew up knowing, like, okay, this is going to hit you at some point. And when it did, I was like, okay, we have to do something about this, you know? And I kind of wished that there was something out there that I could be like, hey, I'm not the only one going through this. There's other people going through this. Let's hear somebody else say, I hear you, I see you, we're doing this together.
Yeah.
So it's not just me. So I think that's what inspired me to come here today and talk about this.
Oh, well, we're happy to have you.
What about you? What inspired you to?
So you kind of talk about how you were prepared for it and you almost knew like about this. And I had it, like, gosh, I have suffered depression since I think probably sixth grade, and I had no idea. I can't even pinpoint it because I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
All I knew is that I would stay weeks at a time home from school, not able to get out of bed.
Yep.
And the idea of going to school and showing up as myself authentically was so overwhelming. And it really wasn't until, God bless him, a kid at my school committed suicide. And all of a sudden it was like, hey guys, there's this thing that really matters and it's called mental health.
Yeah.
And we had speakers and all of a sudden we were taking all these mental health tests and it was like, oh my God, I think that like Rebecca, she marked that she was suicidal on her tests. And that was like a huge thing. So right off the bat, when I learned about it, there's a really negative stigma.
For sure.
And it was, if you have it, you're contaminated. And so I think that there was a part of me that like knew I was, you know, dealing with it, but not exactly what it was and not wanting to confront it. And gosh, since I was a little kid, I've dealt with anxiety and my mom's always tried to talk me into therapy. And it just never, to me, therapy was for people that were insane and crazy.
Yep.
And now I love it. It's like going to talk with my inner BFF as a person.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, I mean, I guess that's the gist of it is, like you said, just being that person for people that's, hey, this is a normal thing to go through.
Yeah.
It's not something you need to be scared of. And there are scary moments, but it happens and you're going to grow through it and it's going to make you an amazing person for it.
Yeah.
I think that I would never take it back. It has humbled me so much and taught me so much. And I wouldn't know to take care of my mental health if it weren't for the depression and the anxiety.
Yep. I think it certainly teaches you something. And I love that there's no stigma here about going to therapy or anything. Like, it's totally okay. And it's something that we all need. I mean, it's no different than, you know, than going to a doctor's appointment. But I've still caught myself being like, hey, like, I'm going to the doctor, but like, really, I'm going to therapy. So this is why we're doing this, so that we can openly say, hey, I'm going to therapy today, and have it not be,
oh yeah,
you know.
And admittedly, I used to do the same thing. I would tell my friends, like, I'm really sick today. Cough, can't make it. And in reality, I was like stuck in my bed. I couldn't do it. And that's when I needed like my friends and to admit to them, like, hey, what a concept. You guys can like comfort me through this. And I can be honest about this. And so
that's why we're doing this.
That's why we're doing this. What is self-love to you? We talk about this a lot. It's a very vital part in taking care of ourselves and our mental health. But what is it to you beyond constant self-positivity? Because we talk about body positivity, for instance, and sometimes it's really hard to even formulate, like, I love my body, and be like, ew, like, that didn't feel good. That doesn't feel natural right now. So like, where did your self-love journey begin, and how do you continue with it on a daily basis?
I think in some ways I've been very lucky in the realm of self-love, because I think I grew up relatively easy on myself. You know, I didn't struggle with body image, you know, a huge ton or anything, but I think my self-love journey started more when I got older and I learned that I didn't trust myself at all. Like, there was no self-trust. I didn't think that I could make decisions for myself that would be good. Mm-hmm. And so I think my version of self-love, and it's different for every person out there, but for me, it was more of like learning to trust myself and understand that I know what's best for me, and I understand myself, and I'm here for myself. And so I think it was just being like, hey, like, you got this, you're okay.
Yeah.
And totally beyond the self, you know, constant self-positivity is, you know, that's kind of toxic.
It is, like, right? To force love on yourself. Yes, exactly.
I love everything. No, you know, I mean, you're not always great all the time. Sometimes we're humans, we mess up. I mean, I trip down the stairs. It happens. Like, it's okay. And not everything in the world is always great. I think that kind of breeds this idea that, like, you have to be happy-go-lucky all the time.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be.
And I think such a radical thing I learned lately is there's a difference between positivity and optimism.
Yes, for sure.
Optimism is a sense of hope, you know? Like, hey, I'm here, I'm in this hole, but I don't have to be positive about it. I can go through it. I can feel all the feels. And once I feel all the feels, that's what's going to build me up to get out of the hole and realize that there's a light out there.
Yep, for sure. I think that that's one of the main things I'd say that helped me in my mental health journey is just realizing that, like, hey, like, you don't have to think that this is great all the time. You know, you can struggle and you can admit that you need help without, like, being a negative person or being pessimistic.
Yeah.
You can still have hope for the future while saying, hey, this sucks right now, you know?
And I even still catch myself trying to be like toxically positive for my friends, and, you know, almost canceling plans because I want them to see the positive, happy-go-lucky Megan. But my mom sent this to me when I first told her that I was struggling with depression. And it's something that I carry with me all the time. And I always send it to my friends. It's one of their classic beloved Winnie the Pooh stories. And basically, Eeyore is sitting in his hut. And Pooh's like, I think we should go check on Eeyore. And they go and they're like, hey, where have you been? He's like, honestly, like, you guys don't want to be around me. Like, I'm sad. I'm not doing well. I'm just going to bring the vibe down. You guys aren't going to have fun with me. Like, go do your thing. And then Pooh's like, but Eeyore, that's like not what friends do. We have to be there for each other and lift you up. That's, I mean, hey, this is Uplift Yoga Foundation. Yeah. So yeah, I love that one. I think about it all the time in terms of self-love. And
The people will still love you if they're the right people, even when you need help.
Yes.
Because that's what we're here for. That's what friends are for.
Yeah. And disclaimer, like, don't feel like you're crying too much or feeling too much. Like, sometimes I will go week after week feeling sad and I'm not coming out of this hole. And I'm like, well, at this point, I have to start acting happy because my friends are going to, you know, want me to come out of the hole before it gets annoying. But like you said, that's not what they do. Oh, can I ask you, how do you continue self-love on a daily basis?
I think for me, it's keeping promises to myself. That's been a big thing that I've been working on lately. Because I am a big procrastinator and stuff. And I think it's important to note that self-love isn't always like face masks and, like hot baths, you know?
Yeah.
It's also doing the work. And so a big thing for me lately has just been, if I say I'm going to do something, I have to do it. Otherwise, I will put it off for all eternity and it will never get done. And then I'll get mad at myself for not doing it. So lately, I've made a yoga routine every night, and I have to do yoga every night, no matter what. I don't care if it's like midnight, I yoga every night.
It's and a
I
have non-negotiable. A timer on
and I have to meet the time. I have to meet 20 minutes every night. And I just make myself do it. And that's helped a lot, actually, to just be like, okay, this is what we're doing. This is our routine. We stick to it because it makes us feel good and it makes us feel better.
I love that you brought that up, because recently I made myself a non-negotiables list.
Yes.
Since we talk about that sometimes. And it has weekly yoga on it.
Yes.
It has meditations daily, six cups of water daily. What else is there? Just all sorts of, I need to have an hour of creative time, an hour of time purposely, devotedly, without my phone, bed by 9:30, there's no phone, but by 11, I need to be in bed. Yeah. So it's really important that you don't argue with yourself on that stuff.
Yeah, I think sometimes we need to just, we're humans, we kind of need a routine. It helps us out. So, and if we don't, I mean, we'll just, I'll go till 1 a.m. doing random stuff and never get anything done that I actually needed to. So sometimes it's important to just, sometimes we just need someone to pat us on the back and be like, here's what you're doing today, buddy. Like, this is what we got to do.
Yeah, and you'll relate to this because you did some homeschooling. I had no routine when I was online schooled. Oh, and I was why do I feel so sad all the time? It's because I wasn't taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would do school at like 1 a.m. because that's like what made me feel good, I guess. But then I didn't realize that, hey, is this really taking care of myself, or am I just trying to be a top, you know, ahead of it student, you know? And so, I think that that's really when I was introduced to like, what is even is self-care, and what's the difference between self-care and self-love, was when I was doing online school.
Yeah.
Because there's no...
There's no schedule.
Pattern.
No,
yeah, exactly.
I think it's funny because me and you, we went through similar things, but we are on complete opposite sides of the spectrum. Like, you were like up doing school all night, and I was the person who left like 4 months of homework until the 1 week deadline and made myself have like panic attacks for like 48 hours straight because I couldn't finish all my work. So there's like completely two sides
of things. That's why I did it so like right as the assignments open at 12 a.m. because I was so scared that would be me, because I am a procrastinator. I do that. And you know, I just started math. It's Thursday and I started math class today, and we've been in school for a week now. So I definitely, a healthy balance is needed. And so, we get that with the non-negotiables.
So while we're on this topic, why did you choose to homeschool, or did you choose to homeschool? Because I think,
you know, now that you bring that up, I really didn't choose to homeschool. I did. I wasn't forced against my will. But basically, I was an actor, and my acting class was getting a lot more advanced and a lot more serious. And they started this rule that you could only be in the class if you're online schooled, because she wanted to start doing like daily.
Yeah.
Or like tri-weekly classes, or I don't know. So, gosh, she basically told me, like, if you want to remain in this class, you have to be online schooled. And I think that's, back at the time, I was like, yes, like, oh my God, yeah, like, this is totally going to convince my mom.
Every day.
Exactly. And then my mom was like, oh my God, no.
Yeah.
Because I think I had kind of always talked to my mom about homeschool because of acting and because it was a threat. She officially like let me do it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess I wanted to do it though, besides the whole acting thing, because I get really socially anxious.
Yeah.
And something I've always struggled with is this ladder that's presented to you in school. Like, as early as, like, gosh, fourth grade, there was like a ladder at school. And in fourth grade, it was the girls with the pretty buns. And I remember they wore Vans. And so I always tried to be like them. And then I think around fifth grade, I was like, why am I climbing this ladder? And so that's when I switched to public school. And I really struggled because everybody else wants to climb the ladder. And so it was really hard to find a group of core friends that didn't get sucked into it, you know?
Yeah. So when did you go to public school? What year?
I switched from private to public in sixth grade.
Oh, so you were at private school. That's a whole other ballpark.
Yeah.
Do you think homeschool, like, did the homeschool help or did it make it worse? Like, how was that in terms of your mental health?
So my mom blames homeschool for my depression. But I'm like, no, this is something that has been lingering for quite a while. And it is genetic. So, I mean, sure, homeschool, I definitely think triggered certain aspects. But gosh, I was having the time of my life when I did online school. I was going to the mall while everyone was at school. And my mom and I were having mother-daughter days. And I could hang out at my dad's office. It was really like a good time for me. So,
yeah, I did homeschool too. I went to public school all my life until freshman year. Mm-hmm. And then freshman year is when, you know, my mental health, you know, did a big splat. And I started having panic attacks and I couldn't talk in class. You know, anytime the teachers would call on me, I would just freak out. You know, I was crying in class all the time and I was skipping so much school, like hundreds of days, like crazy. And so we ultimately just decided that like, hey, like you're failing. I was failing all my classes. Like it was not good. So we switched to homeschool my sophomore year. And then I homeschooled sophomore and junior year and went back to public my senior year. Mm-hmm. So that was like, that was an interesting transition.
I know, that must have been horrifying. Yeah. Gosh. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, I guess I have no comment to add. Yeah, no.
Sometimes it doesn't need one.
I mean, I know, right?
So one question I wanted to ask you was there a specific moment or time that you were like, okay, my mental health needs attention and here's what I'm going to do about it? You know, was there a specific, like, this is it, I need to get help moment, or was it gradual?
I remember it very distinctly because kind of like I said, there was, I didn't understand it. And I kind of shoved it down for a long time. And then my cousin and I would go to Disneyland a lot. And so we got very close. And on the car ride home, I just spilled my guts. And I was like, I've been so sad lately and so depressed lately. And I think that's when I realized like, this is an issue. And I was very proud of myself for talking about it to my cousin. And that was a very revolutionary moment because the first and the hardest step is telling people. Yeah. And my initial plan was to tell her and not ever talk about it again.
Yeah.
And then she actually, with, you know, love as her intention, told my mother about it. So, and there was this whole thing like, oh, don't be mad at me. But it was, you know, in her best intentions. Yep. And it was horrifying, but my mom got me the help I needed. And I think that she was the one who was like, let's take steps with this, you know?
It was necessary.
And she was the one like, let's put you in therapy and let's figure out how I can make you happier. And I started going to my grandma's every week and hang out with cousins. And honestly, it just gave life a little bit more value.
Yeah. Well, and think about that small moment. If you hadn't decided to tell her in that car ride home, I mean, how different would things
be?
Like,
gosh, I haven't even thought about that.
Yeah. It's a crazy thought.
So what about you? I'm so curious, since you've kind of known, you know, you've grown up with this.
I think it's interesting when you grow up just kind of knowing that it's going to be something that might happen to you. Is it almost becomes normalized? And I was so, so sick my freshman year. You know, I wasn't like getting out of bed. I really was not healthy in any way, shape, or form. I wasn't eating. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't like, I just wasn't enjoying life at all. And I think I noticed some hesitancy in myself to talk about this. And I think it's important to be honest about the fact that like, I get nervous when I'm talking about this, but I think it needs to be said. I got really bad to the point where like, I would have panic attacks that would turn into these like complete meltdowns of like screaming bloody murder, and I would not know where I was. Like, I would forget who I was, or like my mom would try to like come comfort me and talk to me. I wouldn't know who she was. Like, I would run away from her. Like, it was terrifying.
Yeah.
And so I hit that point and I was like, okay, this is enough. It's past the point where like, oh yeah, my mom has anxiety, my grandma has anxiety. This is something else. This is something that needs professional help instead of me just trying to be like, no, you're good, Alex. You're fine. You got this. It's just a panic attack, you know? I needed more than that. And so that's when I started going to therapy and, you know, I did group therapy and the whole shebang and tried medications and stuff. So,
and, you know, thank you for reminding me, because it's not just a panic attack. I've been having so many because of school, and it's our body alarming us. Mm-hmm. You know, those red lights are blinking and saying, hey, let's do something about this. Yep. You need to take care of yourself. Yep. So that's always a really good reminder to have. Yeah. And yeah.
And I think like we tend to kind of push everything under. And the way my therapist explained it to me at one point was you have this snowball, right? And it's the palm of your hand. It's not big. And you roll it down the hill and, you know, your snowball is your anxiety, your panic attacks, your depression, whatever, you know, whatever it is for you. And you roll it down this snowy hill and you don't do anything about it. You just let it roll. And by the time it gets to the bottom, it's bigger than you because it just picks up everything all along the way. Mm-hmm. And so you start out with this little problem that bothers you a little bit and you say, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal. And you let it roll. And then soon it is a big deal and you don't know what to do with it anymore and you can't handle it on your own. So what we do is we get it while it's the little snowball and you go to therapy, you talk to your friends, you lean on people, you do your self-care, you get the help you need before it snowballs, you know?
Yeah.
Before it gets out of control and you can't handle it. I'm now to where it's in the palm of my hand.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you weren't human, but I think one of the very important things to remember for you guys out there is feeling and going through things is very human.
It is human.
And there's no dehumanization in feeling it out and talking about it and getting help for it. Like that's where we are breaking down the stigma.
Yeah.
And I am so glad that we're catching these things because I watched a TED talk today and it's the dangers of the single story. And you can't cling on to the stigma and the stereotypes. Yeah. And, you know, you have to admittedly and humanly realize that we have been taught a single story and we're trying to educate ourselves on all the other stories that are surrounded in mental health.
Yeah. I should clarify and say, I don't mean that I like wasn't a human being. You know? I just mean like I stopped feeling like everybody else.
Exactly.
Was feeling.
You know, exactly.
I felt alien because I wasn't in my body and I was disassociated and stuff like that. So that's what I meant by that.
I totally get
that. Yes, it is important to not cling on to the stereotype that, you know, you're different or you're bad because you're struggling with something because everybody's struggling with something somewhere.
Yeah. You're so, like I talked about in middle school, you're so much more than a suicidal exam that some person came to your school to give you, you know?
Yep, for sure. It's strange that we have those.
Mental health is different for everybody. Yeah. So say that you're somebody who doesn't quite understand it yet, which is completely acceptable. Not all of us are educated in it, which is why we're here talking about it.
For sure.
So what can you do for a friend that is struggling? How do you notice that they're struggling? How can you support a friend, you know?
Yeah. I think, again, this is such an individual thing. Each person is going to want different things and be comforted by different things. But I think important things to look out for is just, I mean, you know, your friend, if there's someone who's really talkative and they just haven't been talking much lately, you know, they're taking the back seat in conversations or, you know, you usually go over to their house every day and now they're kind of staying home a lot more and, you know, they don't want to go out as much. And it's, you know, it's just a cue to check in and be like, hey, how are you feeling? And I think if you really give them, most people, the space to be honest about how they're feeling, they'll take the opportunity. Maybe not right away, but people just need to know that it's open for them to not be judged because that's what we're all scared of. We're all scared that we're going to tell somebody what we're feeling and they're going to tell us that it's wrong or bad or we shouldn't be feeling that way. And so if you just give someone the space to be like, hey, what's up? You know, are you okay? Do you need anything? Can I help in any way? Like, do you just want to talk and I'll just listen, you know?
And you know, the really hard part is sometimes from the perspective of someone that's going through it, you want your friends to just automatically know. And when they ask you, it's like almost annoying. Like, what? Because I feel like sometimes we don't know how to answer it ourselves. Like, what do we want our friends to do for us? It's such a foreign concept. And it's like, we don't want to put that burden on anybody.
Yeah.
But I mean, I know one of my friends sends me quotes every so often. And I love that so much. Yep. And being honest and communicating is a huge part of it. Like, I had one friend that would constantly and so dearly check in on me, like, hey, how are you doing? But it was so constant that I got anxious over answering, like, oh, you're expecting me to get better. Like, it's not getting better. It's getting worse. I haven't even hit the climax yet.
Yeah.
So it was like, it almost felt like a test, you know? So then I communicated, like, hey, can we maybe, like, ask how I am a little less often. And that was like, whoa, like I can do this. I'm in control of how people treat me and how I take care of myself. So social media has a huge effect on our mental health, our emotional well-being, our connection, our trust. So how do you juggle that?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I think it's interesting because I am very split on my opinion on social media.
Yes.
I have one side of me that loves it and thinks it is so beneficial in so many ways. Mm-hmm. I have a best friend who lives in New Mexico and we met through social media. She
exactly.
is my soulmate in platonic form. I love her to death. I would not have met her mm-hmm. had it not been for Instagram, had it not been for Snapchat, whatever. So I think it has the means to be really, really good and create such genuine connections. And on the other side of that is, are you using it in a way that makes you feel good? I personally right now am doing the biggest social media cleanse ever. I deleted all of my Instagram, all of my Snapchat, TikTok, everything. It's all gone.
Did you delete the actual accounts or just the apps?
I just deleted the apps.
Gotcha.
So it's like a whole month of absolutely no social media. And the reason I did that was because I went into therapy one day and I didn't connect it to social media right away. And I was like, I feel foggy all the time. Nothing's wrong. My brain is not here. I feel clouded. I feel gross.
Mm-hmm.
And my therapist was like, well, how much are you on your phone every day? And I was like, well, like 11 hours and 59 minutes a day.
That all imposes on you.
Yeah. So she was like, maybe take a break. And I was like, nah, it's fine. I love social media. It's awesome. And then 3 days went by and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to throw my phone in the ocean. And then I just right there deleted everything. So I think it has good things and bad things depending on how you're feeling. You just have to personally look at it and be like, hey, is this making me feel good? Am I following people that make me feel good? Or does this make me want to throw my phone in the Pacific?
Yeah. And you were talking about earlier how you'll grab your phone and just muscle memory. You'll go to Instagram and realize it's not there. Mm-hmm. So something I've been doing is I'll rearrange my social media apps on different pages in different locations because it's all memorized in my head where they are.
Yeah.
So then I'll go and I'll click on Instagram and it's not Instagram. It's like the tips app or something.
Yeah.
It is so helpful. And then I recently put Instagram on the very last page so that I'll keep scrolling and I'm like, where the heck is it? It's not here.
Yeah.
But actually today I ended up just deleting it too because sometimes I'll delete it daily just because the thought of having to re-download it is so much work that I won't bother.
Yeah, I do the same thing mm-hmm. sometimes. I think it's just about an individual, how you're feeling that day. I mean, again, like I love social media. I like posting pictures with my friends. So there's nothing wrong with it. Mm-hmm. It's not bad.
Yeah.
I like seeing what my family's up to. It's a good means for communication, especially in today's world where everything is online. You can't really avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to just check in with yourself and be like, hey, is this making me feel good? And if it's not, then maybe adjust it. You know, put the screen time limits on your phone. You know, unfollow some people who make you feel bad. You know, it's an individual thing.
Yeah. And so Alex, when we got here today, she took a photo of us and she said out loud, like, hey, I'm not going to post this on social media. I'm just going to have this for my own well-being.
Yeah.
I had a cousin that did that for a long time. She actually recently downloaded social media for, you know, art purposes.
Yeah.
But we would go on these like elaborate photo shoots just to like feel good about ourselves, get a little spicy, and she would save the photos and not post them. And to me, it was like, why? Like, why would you go on like a huge photo shoot and like put such effort into photos to have them for yourself? But there's so much value and power in that.
Yeah.
Like the world doesn't have to be a part of everything, everything in your life.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's important. And I've noticed that in myself too. Like everything I do, I'm like, oh, let me take a picture of my breakfast and post it on Instagram. And I'm like, does Instagram really need to see my breakfast? Probably not. So it's just about being picky choosy. You got to be picky.
And like you said, it's okay to have fun with it.
Oh,
like,
of course.
Last year I had this like big revelation, like, oh my God, I have so much power at my hands on social media.
Yeah.
I should post like helpful things.
Yes.
And that's good and all, but you can also have fun on it and have silly and ridiculous and unnecessary posts too. Like not every single post has to be a revolutionary thing about mental health or, you know, you know, so Yeah, that's something I'm coming to realize lately.
I think it really just is an individual thing about posting what makes you feel good and following who makes you feel mm-hmm. good. And while we're on this topic, do you have any Instagram accounts, YouTube accounts, whatever, that make you feel good? Do you have any recommendations? Gosh,
I follow so many that I probably couldn't even name one off the top of my head. I know self-care, the account is literally called self-care.
Nice.
Has like some really cool art
nice.
And little tips and fun little things. I always appreciate accounts like that, like Just Girl Project, Self Care is for Everybody or Everyone. They always have like fun little artsy things, but then there's also ones like Good Humans Only.
Yeah.
And I think it's called the Depression Chronicles, and mm-hmm. those have like more serious
yeah.
tools and resources. So yeah. it just, you know, I like a mix of all of it.
Yeah.
What about you?
I think there's a few. I'm a big reader and writer, so uh-huh. there's an account. And I follow her originally because she suffers from chronic illness like mm-hmm. I do. And so she writes a lot about that, but she also writes about life in general. And so her Instagram is Barry_happy. And I just love her account because she's so honest about things, but she's insanely positive and not in like a crazy, like everything is great way. She's very honest about everything she goes
yeah.
through, but she manages to find good in everything that she goes through. And so I really like that. And then there's a YouTuber and she has Instagram too, but it's Yonomi Hitomi. Mm-hmm. And she does a lot of like meditation and spirituality stuff. But she's very, very open about her journey through spirituality and how she got to where she is. She posted like a whole 30-minute video that was just like videos from every stage in her life, and she's crying in some of them, and she's like mm-hmm. laughing and having a great time in some of them. And it's just, I like accounts that are very honest and that show every side of humanity and not just the good side or the bad side. Like there's everything. You got to get a mix of all of it.
Yeah.
And so I try to follow accounts like that.
Glennon Doyle is yes. really great to follow. She posts a lot of honesty.
Yes.
I have to shout out Cleo Wade because yeah. she, I love her so much. She wrote Heart Talk and she wrote Where to Begin, and they're poetry style, so they're really easy reads from someone like me that doesn't like to read. I sat down and like in 2 hours I just like went through it and I was like, whoa, like that's the last page. It yeah. is so good and it touched me so deeply, and I think that was really the beginning of my journey of wanting to help myself and help others.
Yeah.
And Gabby Bernstein is yes. our Bible here at yes. Uplift. I love her for so sure. much.
Yeah. I think so we have some questions from Instagram, but yes. one of them is connected to kind of what we're talking about.
Okay.
So one of the questions that we got was, is there a specific quote or lyric from a song or something your friends send to you that makes you feel good, that helps you when you're low? Like, do you have any like anything that you would say to someone or that got you through your own journey?
Gosh. I want to hear yours first.
Okay.
I'm so intrigued by this.
I have like, again, I'm a reader and a writer. I could sit here for 45 minutes just telling you my favorite quotes. Like I have like things saved on my phone, like hundreds and hundreds of just quotes.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a specific one that I wrote, or actually my mom used to write on my arm. Like she used to write little messages in Sharpie mm-hmm. to get me through the day so that when I was having like bad days, I could look down and say, you know, my mom said it's okay. I got this. Like,
yeah.
it's going to be good, when I was a really little kid. And then when I got, you know, really bad in high school, there was this quote, and I want to say it's by Robert Frost, but I'm not 100% sure. So credit to whoever wrote it, is the only way out is through. And so I used to have her write that on my arm every day of freshman year because it's true. The only way to get through something, you have to go through it. Like it's in the name. Like the only way out is through. You can't just skip over the bad parts of life. You can't yeah. just be positive all the time. You have to go through the muck to get out of the muck.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I think, the big like quote that got me through a lot of stuff and my favorite one to tell other people.
Yeah. I personally, for me, it's, I love, gosh, what's that poet's name? It's not Aristotle. It's Atticus.
Oh,
I
yeah, yeah.
love Atticus. He has so much on self-love. So I have all kinds of his stuff hung up in my walls. But John Steinbeck says, or once said, and now that you don't have to be perfect, you can be good.
Yes.
And that resonates with me. I get like chills every time I say it.
I got chills too.
Because I'm a perfectionist. Yeah. And the thing is, once you let go of perfection, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
And so now that I don't have to be perfect, I can be a good friend. I can be a good human. I can be good at being authentic, good at loving myself, because I don't have a cookie cutter frame put around being perfect. And the thing is, being good at something isn't necessarily being good. It's just being authentic and whole and honest about it.
And let me say, being good makes you feel good.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's true. It sounds simple, but it really is. When you're doing things that you like and that make you happy, you feel good. You know, when you're a good friend, you feel good. Mm-hmm. Like, the more good you do, the more good you feel. It's true.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us for part one of our mental health podcast. In part two, we dive deeper into our personal journeys with mental health and explore tools and practices that actually work. Whether you are just beginning your mental health journey or taking additional steps to own your whole wellness, we believe that there will be something in episode two for you to add to your mental health repertoire. See you there, and thanks again.